I know this encyclical is addressed to people who believe in God, but the idea that God can find a place in the public arena is a little bit far-fetched. If you think that the movers and shakers in the economic and financial world, a lot of them don't believe in God. Am I wrong?
Well, I think in the part of the world that we're in, that's true. But there's more and more books now talking about European exceptionalism, as they call it, that saying that Europe is a bit different from the rest of the world in precisely in this very kind of strong process of secularization. Other rich parts of the world, obviously United States is the most obvious example, have a different relationship with religion, which isn't nearly so negative in that sense. So I think that's one factor. I think, though, you're right that many of the people involved in the whole development debate and in the international organizations are quite secularized. However, we shouldn't, I don't think, underestimate the value they put on documents like these encyclicals. I give you one example. A previous encyclical in this series, commemorating Populorum Progressio, was by John Paul, Solitudo Rei Socialis, which came out in 1987. After that encyclical was published, they had a big seminar in the UN in New York on this encyclical. That was in 1988. Then a couple of years later, the first UN Development Programme report focusing on human development was produced. So we can't say there's a direct connection between the encyclical and the fact that the UN Development Programme changed its focus from looking at development as an economic question only to development as primarily human development. We don't know that that was directly caused by the encyclical, but they certainly were interested in what the Pope was saying, and all we can say is that 2 years after they had that seminar, they were producing reports on human development, which have become very, very important. Those reports have really changed the focus of international policymakers from thinking about development in terms of increasing gross domestic product, which was the way pretty much people thought about it before, to thinking about development as what is happening to human beings, which is exactly what the Church would like to see.
Pope Benedict, in the encyclical, points to the role of the state in encouraging a civilization of economy.
Oh, okay.
Is this the civilization of economy he's talking about? Or?
Well, certainly policymakers have an incredible influence over the way people think. So, and since most policymakers are in state institutions, policies usually produced by states or by international bodies, the way they think about development is going to have either a civilizing or a not civilizing effect. You know, they are some of the key people who influence the way we think about these things. They also have a big influence on the media. They have big resources for doing research. So if they're guiding their research in certain lines, then we get progress in a helpful direction or not, depending on what their policy is. And so they are crucial people who influence the direction of development, the direction of where funds go, what we actually do to try to improve a situation which, even though we are in a different situation from Paul VI in the 60s, still nevertheless is a dramatic situation with billions of people with very little to eat, displaced, huge inequalities in the world. I mean, we're not in a terribly different position today from the one that Paul VI was in that regard.
So there's a widening gap.
In some respects, it's getting worse, yeah. Some countries, especially some of the African countries, are poorer now than they were in the 60s. So it's true that big countries like China and India have made big strides forward, but that masks, if you look at a world scale, it masks really serious problems developing in other areas, especially Africa. Yeah.
Does this encyclical connect anyway with Pope Benedict's first encyclical, God is Love? There's
yes.
a social slant there, isn't
yes, it? Yes, there is in the second part, partly because the first encyclical was also inspired by Cor Unum, which is also behind this encyclical.
Cor Unum being the Vatican body that handles the charity and aid that the Pope offers to people in difficulty, right?
So Cor Unum wanted, I know this because it happened before John Paul died, they wanted an encyclical on charity. So they, and of course the Pope himself, when he was elected, he wanted his first encyclical to be on this issue. So the two things came together. So the second part, the part that's more on charity and action, is very influenced by Cor Unum. That's the first encyclical. So they also were involved in the writing of this one. So yes, there's a clear connection because, as we said, charity in terms of gratuitous giving, not necessarily in terms of giving people their rights and involving them in the economic and social process, which is also important. But charity in terms of gratuitous giving is also very important, and that comes across.
Of course, the Church has always had social doctrine at the heart of its teaching right down the centuries.
Oh, yes. Well,
Bernard de Clairvaux, for example, Charter.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we can go right back to even the Jewish times. You know, if you look at the Old Testament, very strong judgments that come through the prophets on the Jewish people if they didn't treat their workers properly, if they didn't pay them properly, if they didn't, you know, this is a very, very deeply rooted in Christian tradition and in the roots on which the Christian tradition is based. So now it's become a more explicit teaching, but it's always been there in the history of the Church. Yeah.
You mentioned how you were struck by the fact that economists had helped to draw up the encyclical. Was that something new to have technical people move in?
No, I don't think so, because it's also pretty well known that, for instance, Quadragesimo Anno, done in 1931, was influenced by Gundlach, and von der Breuning was more the German economists who were influencing that, German thinkers. This time it's been more a group of Italian economists. But the point that I think is important here is that the Church recognises, and it's said in the encyclical itself, that the technical competence that is being gained in the social sciences, like economics, like sociology, is very, very important. It doesn't replace the social teaching, but the social teaching is in direct dialogue with these sciences in order to be able to say something sensible that relates to people's concrete lives. Hence why the encyclicals need to be renewed, because there's a part of them which is continuous, the teaching doesn't change. There's a part also that is trying to deal with the problems of that time, and of course they move on, problems don't stay the same. So it's a very good example, actually, in the way in which the encyclical is written, this combination of the Church's pastors with technical experts. It's a very good example of how the social teaching itself should work in all situations, you know, this combination of what the Church has to offer with what the best of our thinking has to offer too.
May I ask you one last question? Is there anything else that struck you in a particular way in this encyclical, you personally? Either as Helen Alford or as a Dominican?
Well, I suppose one thing that did strike me was that I saw that the name of the Focolare approach to making this connection between deep values of life and the economy, which is called the economy of communion, I noticed that that was included in the encyclical. And that made me think of how in Pope Paul's encyclical, in Populorum Progressio, he made direct reference to Father Lebray, who was a Dominican priest, who had been developing a lot this idea of development. And Paul VI was very close to him, and he actually quotes Lebray in the encyclical. And so now, 40 years on, instead of the Dominicans being quoted, it's Focolare that gets a direct quote. And I think that's also indicative of, you know, some of the changes that have been occurring in the Church, and how now these big lay movements, how important that they are. They're producing ideas and producing results which are important enough to be included in an encyclical.
Well, maybe the next social encyclical will have Sister Helen Alford, the Dominican, in it.
Well, that would be something. I don't know about that.